Hey, everybody. My name is Sarah Krieger. I'm an emergency physician and intensivist at UCLA, and this is the ICU EDU podcast. Let's talk about some various permutations of sick and hypotensive. So patients who are both sick and hypotensive may be scary, but we kind of know what to do with those patients, or at least we have an approach that works for us to deal with those patients. But there are two categories of patients that we find a lot more equivocal. One, the patient who looks sick but isn't hypotensive. And two, the patient who is hypotensive but doesn't actually look sick. So what do we do with these two categories of patients where the blood pressure number doesn't match how the patient looks? Let's start with the category of patients who definitely look sick, but they're not actually hypotensive. These are the patients I talk about all the time that really illustrate the fact that shock is not about blood pressure. So when you see this patient and they look terrible, their mental status is bad. Maybe they're agitated, confused, or just straight up obtunded. Their work of breathing is bad. Maybe they're diaphoretic or even mottled. Their cap and refill time isn't good. Or maybe you have some labs that look bad. Their lactate's high. Their bicarb is low. What about those patients? So those patients, sometimes the issue is that their hypotension is just being masked by sympathetic activation. So there's a lot of things that may be happening to make these patients sympathetically activated. And the first is simply that compensated shock is a state of physiologic stress. Physiologic stress states make people tachycardic, tachypneic, and hypertensive. In addition, these patients often come in respiratory distress, either because they have a primary lung problem or because they're compensating for their metabolic acidosis. And often these patients are in pain or anxiety because they feel like they're dying, and that makes you anxious, and fair enough, because they kind of are dying. All of those things can make you sympathetically activated, and these patients come in and they look terrible, but their blood pressure is normal because all that sympathetic activation is just masking their true underlying hypotension. The second situation to think about with these patients is the situation where their shock state is simply not expressing itself as hypotension, because it doesn't always. A lot of things go into the assessment of shock, and hypotension isn't necessarily one of them. And not all shock states show up as a low MAP. Now, this is most obvious when we just artificially make somebody's blood pressure good by giving them pressors. Like, if you take a patient who's dying of hemorrhagic shock and they're bleeding to death, if you give them enough norepi, you can make their blood pressure look good. They're still dying of shock. So that's one situation. But the physiologic situations often happen in patients where vasodilation is not a significant contributor to their shock physiology. So a lot of the time, these are the more cardiogenic shock patients, where MAP, hypotension, is not necessarily a core part of their initial shock presentation. So what do we do? What do we do with these patients that are sick but not hypotensive? Well, you treat them just like you would the patient who is sick and hypotensive. You figure out what's causing their shock and fix it. Now, if they're in a situation when their hypotension is being masked by sympathetic activation, be prepared for them to become hypotensive. So, for example, in the trauma patient, when you give them pain medication. In the patient in respiratory distress, maybe when you put them on BiPAP and you take away their respiratory distress, or you just wait long enough, be ready for them to become hypotensive. Now, what we should not do is try and use pain, distress, anxiety as pressors. Why? Because that's why God made actual pressors. We shouldn't say, oh, no, no, we can't treat this patient's pain or anxiety or help their work of breathing because then they'll get hypotensive. Just start some norepi and be ready for that to happen. And in fact, you just did yourself a favor because you revealed the degree of their true hypotension. Now, what about the patients in decompensated shock, but their shock's just not manifesting itself as hypotension? Now, this is a little bit less straightforward, because you can't sort of do the plug and play, give norepi and admit to the ICU, but you have to realize that just because they don't need a vasopressor doesn't necessarily mean that they don't need some kind of vasoactive medication support. So particularly in the patients in cardiogenic shock, if you're treating them and you're trying to address their shock, maybe you're trying to diurese them and they're just not responding, maybe they actually do need some kind of vasoactive. Maybe they need some milrinone, some dobutamine. If it's a patient with pulmonary hypertension, maybe they need an inhaled pulmonary vasodilator. So keep in mind that just because they're not hypotensive doesn't mean they're not in shock, and they may still need a vasoactive medication, even if that medication is not a vasopressor. So what about the other category of patients? The category category of patients where they are hypotensive, but not sick. So I got a call about this the other day. A really smart ER doctor I know calls me and is like, look, I have this patient. I think I need to admit her to you in the ICU because her blood pressure is persistently like 85 over 40, but she looks fine. Like, I really don't think she's in sick. I really don't think she's in shock. All of her labs and everything looks great, but I don't think the floor is going to take her because she's just persistently hypotensive. And that actually is another characteristic of patients that I think about in this category of hypotensive but not sick, is that they're stably hypotensive. They're not the patient where the nurse is calling you in to the room every 5 minutes because it's dropping again, the MAP's dropping again, I need to go up on the pressors, I need to give more fluid, I need to give more blood. They're just kind of hanging out at a stably low blood pressure. It's not actively deteriorating, it's just hanging out at the same low place. There's a couple of things I think about that may cause a patient to fall into this pattern of hypotension without evidence of significant ongoing physiologic stress or hypoperfusion. The first is endocrine stuff. I think about their thyroid. I think about their adrenals. Do they have some kind of relative or absolute adrenal insufficiency? Then I think about medications. Are they baseline on blood pressure and or heart rate medications that may be dropping their blood pressure? Or did we give them a blood pressure or heart rate medication and cause their blood pressure to drop? Because often when they do that, they don't look that sick, you know? For example, brash patients, patients who come in with brash syndrome, often just don't look that sick, even though their hemodynamics don't look great. The next category I think about is patients who may be just chronically catecholamine depleted. So these are like your chronic methamphetamine users who come in and they're sleeping it off and their blood pressure is just low, low, low. And they're not necessarily in shock. They're just completely catechol depleted. And then lastly, the patients who just have low baseline vascular tone. So most commonly we see this in cirrhotic patients where they just live at a blood pressure of like 80 over 40 and that's just what they do. But we also see it in pregnant patients, right? Pregnant patients have lower baseline vascular tone, and that's perfectly normal and reasonable for them, and they're fine. In the ICU, we often see it in the patients with chronic critical illness. This patient who's been in the ICU for months and months and months, and we all just get used to the fact that their new baseline is a MAP of 55, and nobody panic when you walk by their room because that's just where they live these days. Now, sometimes patients like this will show up in the ED because, I don't know, they sprained their ankle or get admitted for something routine like a plaque placement, and then everybody loses their mind because the patient is just happily hanging out at their baseline blood pressure, and the only difference is now somebody's checking it. That is sometimes the case. But that's not always the case. Sometimes these patients show up with what I think about as a second hit problem, where they may hang out at a reasonably normal blood pressure on a normal day, but they can't mount an appropriate response to a physiologic stress or even a relatively minor one. That physiologic stressor may be an infection, maybe a little dehydration, a little bit of bleeding, but the stressor by itself is not robust enough to be driving true tissue hypoperfusion or significant physiologic stress. So this is when the patient may have a little UTI, but they don't have gram-negative bacteremia. The patient may have had a minor GI bleed, but is not hemorrhaging to death. Because, you know, the patient who has gram-negative bacteremia, that patient's going to be in florid shock. The patient who's bleeding to death, they should be in florid shock. But what about the patient who has a minor UTI? They had a little bit of bleeding. They simply can't mount a physiologic stress response to that, and so it pushes them over the edge. So what do we do with these patients that are hypotensive but not sick? It's nice if we can figure out what a baseline blood pressure is on these patients. I mean, if a family member comes in with 3 years of medical records and is like, see, look, it's been documented every week, their blood pressure is always 85 over 40. That's great, but that's usually, we're not lucky enough for that to happen. The number one thing I think we really need to do for these patients is look for that second hit and treat it. It's just that you can't necessarily expect it to be super impressive. You know, maybe it's a minor little UTI. Maybe it's a nearly invisible pneumonia on chest x-ray. Maybe they're a little dehydrated or had a minor GI bleed a couple days ago. But look for that second hit and make sure you treat it. Just don't always expect it to be that impressive when you find it. Then I try and treat anything specific that I think might be predisposing them to not being able to mount that physiologic stress response. So if I think this is an endocrine problem, If I have any reason to suspect that a patient may be relatively, or I suppose absolutely, adrenally insufficient, that's more rare, but it can happen, I give them steroids. If they're on chronic steroids, chronically immunosuppressed, sometimes your COPD patients will come in and they'll have had multiple courses of outpatient steroids, I'll give them a test dose of steroids. Similarly, hypothyroid. You know, true myxedema coma is rare, but in a patient on baseline thyroid medications, often what'll happen is if they're a little sick for other reasons, maybe they're a little dehydrated because they had gastro, and what else are they not doing? They're not taking their thyroid medications. And so in those patients, I'll try and get their thyroid medications in them, and I'll sometimes supplement them with a little stress dose steroids to see if that helps. Then there's the medications, the blood pressure medications, the heart rate medications that either maybe the patient has been taking too much at home. Maybe the patient now has some acute kidney injury or renal failure, so isn't clearing them. Or maybe we just got overzealous in the emergency department and gave them a little bit too much hydralazine or IV metoprolol. So if that's the case, you have two options. One, you can just wait it out. And often that's all you need to do. Just wait till it wears off and they're going to be fine, because often these patients are not actually shocky from that. That being said, if you want to or you think they are starting to look bad, then you can treat it. You can give them a little push dose pressors. If you want to start them on a little peripheral norepi and wait it out with them on norepi, you totally can, but they'll often get better on its own in time. Now, in the patients who have low baseline vascular tone, sometimes you just have to accept that their blood pressure is going to be low. But once you've treated and identified any possible second hits, and you've really dug deep to make sure that they're not shocky and they continue to look good, their labs are trending good, and their blood pressure is just hanging out like that, you know, you really need to think seriously about, am I going to start them on a pressor drip to push their blood pressure to a value that I'm comfortable with? Or am I just going to be like, the patient's comfortable, I'm comfortable? And usually what ends up happening is they get admitted to the ICU, because the minute you try and stick them on the floor or keep them on the floor, if they're already there, everybody freaks out and somebody's going to start them on pressors. And so that's usually functionally what ends up happening, and that's okay. But, you know, the more important thing is just to make sure we've identified any second hits and then support their blood pressure if you need to, but realize that you're probably more treating yourself than treating them. Lastly, the patients who may be catechol depleted versus unresponsive. Often, again, these are the chronic meth patients who are just doing methamphetamines on a daily basis, and then they come in and they can't mount a physiologic stress response because they're just chronically catecholamine depleted. And in these patients, often they will need something if they've taken a second hit to keep their blood pressure up. And your go-to pressor of choice in those patients is actually vasopressin or some kind of non-adrenergic vasopressor, because they're going to respond much better to that. Now, in any of these cases, if the patient is also malnourished, if they're also hypoalbuminemic, that can really magnify the effects of any of these other things. So if I think that that is also an issue, magnifying one of these other problems, then sometimes I'll give a little 25% albumin to see if that helps as well. So what about midodrine? Is midodrine something we can and should be using in these patients who are not sick but are hypotensive? Is that something we should be doing? Now, first, to be clear, we shouldn't be scared of midodrine. I mean, there's now many patients who run around on midodrine as outpatients. We're using it frequently, increasingly frequently, I would say, in the ICU, mainly to get and keep patients off low-dose vasopressors, maybe to help them tolerate hemodialysis so I can get them off CRRT, and often in our patients with chronic critical illness who are hypotensive at baseline now. But in all of these cases, when we use it in the ICU, I'm using it in a patient I already know very well, and I'm using it during the recovery phase of their critical illness, and I'm using it to get them out of the ICU, not to keep them from needing to be admitted to the ICU in the first place. And so that's a very different question from whether we should be using midodrine in the ED in a patient in their acute phase of illness so that we don't have to admit them to the ICU at all. So what should we be doing? Should we be using it in the ED? And unfortunately, we don't currently have a lot of evidence to guide us. There is a single very tiny randomized control trial. It had all of 32 patients in it. It came out in Critical Care Explorations in 2021 and basically started septic patients on midodrine in the first 24 hours of presentation. And they basically were not powered to find any differences in anything. There was a trend towards decreased pressor doses and decreased number of hours on pressors, but basically their conclusion was a larger randomized trial is feasible. Okay. There were two retrospective reviews. One came out in Annals of Emergency Medicine in 2022, and another came out in Critical Care in 2024. And I'll have references to both those in the show notes. But both of them showed similar things. In a retrospective review, they both basically showed that early midodrine was associated with lower ICU stay and lower mortality, but the patients who got started on midodrine early were also all less sick. And this should be of no surprise, right? The patients we're starting midodrine on in the ED or early in their course are exactly the patients who were like, oh, they're not that bad. They're not that sick. Maybe if I start them on a little midodrine, they won't really need pressors. And so I don't know what any of these studies mean. This is why in this particular case, we really, really need a bigger randomized controlled trial, because I think with the current state of practice, it's going to be impossible to separate midodrine from how sick the patient is in a retrospective review. So until we have more evidence, here is my take. If the patient is on midodrine at home, I think that it's perfectly reasonable to start their home dose, assuming they can take PO. There's a subset of patients who take midodrine sort of on an as-needed basis before dialysis as an outpatient. And if they do that as an outpatient and they're getting dialyzed while you're in the ED, which now that we're boarding everybody, often they do, please start them on their home dose of midodrine that they usually get before dialysis if they're getting dialyzed. I think that's all very reasonable. What I think we need to be very careful to not do with midodrine is to artificially make the blood pressure look good in order to avoid admitting them to the ICU, while also masking their underlying cause of shock and the evolution of their shock. So in patients who are hypotensive and sick, in that category of patients, I wouldn't consider starting midodrine at all. But in the patient that we're talking about here, the patient who's not sick but is hypotensive and has a stably low blood pressure, I think that probably at some point in the future, it's going to become a very reasonable thing to do in these patients, especially if the alternative is giving them liter after liter after liter of fluid and hope that the BP will get better. So I think at some point, this may be a very reasonable thing. That being said, at this point in time, starting midodrine in the ED is not something I do routinely. Why? Because people are so early in the evolution of their illness. And in order to do it, I would need to be pretty convinced that their trajectory is going to continue on the not sick but hypotensive route. And that early in the trajectory, it can be hard to know, and I can always be wrong. I'm wrong frequently. And so if I were to do such a thing, I would really need a system in place to make sure that I can carefully monitor them and I'm not just masking them developing worsening shock and nobody's calling me because, quote, the blood pressure is okay. Now, there are some occasional times where I will do this in the ED, and that's when I have a patient where their goals of care specifies that they don't want ICU level of care. These are often the elderly patients who fall into that not sick really, but have this kind of smoldering stable hypotension after I've addressed all the things we talked about above, and they just don't want the ICU. In those patients, I'm like, okay, fair enough. And maybe it's actually safer for them for me to not try and stick them in the ICU. And if they don't want that, then I think midodrine in those patients who don't want ICU level of care, it's a reasonable thing to do if they're hypotensive. One situation I can think of where I would start midodrine early on is in a bad cirrhotic patient with hepatorenal syndrome. So in those patients, in addition to giving them the albumin, you also want to support their blood pressure to perfuse the kidneys. So if they're already in the ICU, you can start some norepi, but if they're not going to the ICU, starting midodrine is very reasonable. Now, that being said, usually that's something that if they're not in the ICU will be done on the floor. And more importantly, hepatorenal is really a diagnosis of exclusion. And the first thing that you need to figure out in those patients is, do they have another underlying cause of their acute renal failure? Are they in shock? Are they GI bleeding and so forth? And so usually your early workup should be focused on finding other causes they might be hypoperfusing their kidneys from anyways. So that's my overall approach to the various permutations of sick and hypotensive. In the patients who are definitely sick but not hypotensive, you got to recognize that, yes, this patient is in shock, and fundamentally approach them the same way you would approach any patient in shock. Figure out what is causing the shock and fix it. In these patients, often their sympathetic activation is masking their hypotension, and you got to be prepared to treat that hypotension that will magically appear the minute you do something to decrease their sympathetic activation. And then also understand that there are some patients who just don't express their shock through a low MAP initially, And keep in mind that shock is not synonymous with blood pressure, and therefore treatment of shock isn't synonymous with pressors. And if they're hypoperfusing but not hypotensive, sometimes they still need a vasoactive, just not a pressor, to treat their shock. And that second category of patients who are not sick, but they are hypotensive, in that category of patients, you think about a couple of things that might predispose them to not being able to mount an adequate physiologic stress response. So you think about endocrine stuff, whether they're on baseline blood pressure or heart rate control meds, whether they may have low baseline vascular tone like cirrhotic patients, or whether they may be baseline catecholamine depleted. And then you start looking for that second hit, that minor physiologic stress that you may need to treat, like a little bit of infection or dehydration or mild bleeding. And if that patient is still hypotensive, can you consider midodrine? Well, I don't think that we're quite at a point that we can do this routinely yet, but maybe in the future, it'll give us a really good approach to that not sick, but yes, hypotensive patient. And finally, if you've convinced yourself that your patient just lives at a low baseline blood pressure, they're not in shock, they're not hypoperfusing anything, and they just live there, then maybe you can just leave them alone. And really, we mean it when we say treat the patient, not the number. Thanks so much for listening.